Hello, my friends. Hello, my life warriors, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to the Day In, Day Out podcast. Woo! Today on episode 210, I was very lucky to have a privilege to have Tim Kellis on the podcast. I have to say he is a bit of a magician, a miracle worker, because yes, he has solved the marriage problem. He teaches couples to create a lifelong marriages. We talked about many things with regards to the topic of marriage. We talked about, how can I put it? We talked about common sense within marriages. We talked about how people can look at their relationships, their marriages from their own each side perspective. And yes, having those sort of logical key conversations you need to have to help sustain a long, healthy marriage. Happy life, happy wife, happy spouse. Happy house. That's what it should be about. Anyway, enjoy the podcast, enjoy the show, and yes, please subscribe if you can, and yeah, have an awesome day. Yeah. Peace. Ha ha. Oh, baby girl. Hello, my friends. Hello, my life warriors, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to the Day In, Day Out podcast. Woo! Today on episode 210. I am very lucky, privileged to have Tim Kellis. Let's just say, look, you can call him many a thing, but I'm going to call him a wizard, an alchemist of sorts, because he says he has solved the problem of marriage, techniques to keep couples together long term. And this is the thing. Look, as I sit here, knowing I'm going to make several mistakes, even though I'm not married, and my lady is in the other room. If she hears this conversation, she'll be like, yeah, hey, when's it going to happen? Are you going to propose? Come on, come on, come on, come on. Yeah, I need your help and guidance, no doubt. How are you today, Tim? How are you?
I am doing very good, Liwe. I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to come and speak on your podcast. This is great. I'm looking forward to it. Today's going to be fun.
We can only hope and try, and don't let me down, Tim. Don't let me down.
I won't. Now, no worries.
Yeah. Now, look, in the world today, there are many things that will present us with, many things will make us think, what's the meaning of life? Why are we here? Is there any other life out there? Other things which might, which are the Rubik's cubes of nature, which I cannot say right now because I'm a gentleman. Now, marriage, that is that is the epic, final frontier. Even though we've been marrying each other for generations, how long term, getting this right, what would you say are some of the key tenets?
Well, first of all, when I say I have solved the marriage problem, mm-hmm. Okay, the bottom line with our conversation is the solution is equality. That's why it's the title of my book. One of the things that an engineer, which is my background, I'm an engineering degree. I was actually the first semiconductor analyst on Wall Street to focus on the communications market. So I have a pretty significant resume. At the height of the market in 2000, I had met this girl. Actually, we'd known each other for 8 years. She always had a boyfriend. I always had a girlfriend, but we got together unencumbered. And as you know, if you've ever fallen in love with the person you're supposed to be with, it happened very quickly. Mm-hmm. We got together, fell in love, going to spend the rest of our lives together. And then we started fighting. But more importantly, when we went to the therapist and I realized the therapist wasn't helping, the pain of this relationship ending is what motivated me to do this. And so what I mean by an engineer in my background, before the 60s, our divorce rate was single digits, but it was structured for thousands of years where you and I were in charge. The man was in charge. It was called patriarchy. Mm. Okay. In 1970, less than 1% of all law and medical degrees went to women. By 1990, that number was over half. So basically what we all know has happened is women are now just as educated as men are, they're just as employable as men are, and they're no longer subordinate to the man financially. So if the relationship's not working out, you know, divorce is no longer looked down upon in our culture. If you and your spouse get divorced, nobody's going to think less of you. But before the 60s, it was highly frowned upon. And the reason for that is we have not figured out yet the next evolution in the relationship between a man and a woman. And that next evolution is equality. Women used to be in charge before men. It was called matriarchy. Then men took over. And now we're trying to figure out marriages where nobody's in charge, where there are no distinctions. There can be no superiority. Perfect equality affords no temptation for abuse or control. If I were to summarize for you, Miwe, what is the difference between success and failure? Relationships that are successful because couples get along. Relationships that are unsuccessful because couples don't get along. It's that simple. And so basically what we do is we get into conflict resolution. So if we were to look at struggling relationships, the one characteristic that is dominant in virtually every relationship that is struggling is control. And we all know that. One or both are trying to control the relationship. And then I get into the psychology of the relationship on why that happens. But the solution to the problem is equality, where basically you and your partner have an equal say in your relationship. And that's what we've got to figure out how to get that done.
I hear that. And like, you know, like equality would be absolutely ideal in this world today with regards to pretty much everything out there. But like, this is the thing. Like, I love the whole facts of the stats of how more and more women are getting more and more educated, how they're taking control of their lives and everything like this. Now, one of the things which is interesting about this, the last sort of 2 years, 3 years, the sort of shift is happening with regards to sort of education and that sort of like realm of equality. More women are going to college, less men are going to college. And like with regards to the sort of realms of marriage, that is proving to be slightly a problem in Western nations, where that's like a true fact, where more women are getting highly educated over guys who are not getting educated, and them sort of before they get to the marriage stage finding that ideal mate, if you get what I mean. Ooh, have you frozen? Oh, no, he's there.
So are you talking about men are less educated than women? Is that what the point that you're getting? Or men are not as interested in getting educated?
No, I'm saying there is a shift in the sort of power dynamic, if you will. Like, more women are making more money than, like, men out there at present. It's turning to, like, turn around. Would you say, like, if couples now come together with marriage, would you say there's going to be more of a sort of shift in the have you seen more of a shift in the dynamic with regard?
Well, the way I would respond to your question,
yeah,
the biggest hole in our culture of marriage today, the biggest problem in our culture today, as I just stated, it's because there's thoughts and feelings, logic and emotions. Those are the two things that happen in our mind. Okay. Yeah. Historically speaking, before the education of women, men were the ones that controlled the logic and women were the ones that controlled the emotions. Those were the way that they were separated. The man controlled the finances. He's the one that made decisions for the marriage. The woman raised the children, or she was responsible for the environment of the home. And so when I say equality, what I mean by equality is mental equality, which is where both the man and the woman get to think and feel in the relationship. So the biggest weakness right now in our relationships is men being emotional. Okay. I'm not gay, not that there's anything wrong with it, as Jerry Seinfeld so famously said, because I, Tim, have realized that for me to be a better partner, I'm obviously very logical, but I also need to open up my emotional side. Okay? It's still considered a weakness for a guy to show emotions. We've got to change that dialogue. And so the point is, to the way I would answer your question, 90% of the people that I deal with are women, and 90% of the women that I deal with cannot get their husbands interested in having a conversation about marriage. Number one, we don't like asking for directions. The other response is women are basically taken over now, and they're trying to control the relationship. Have you ever finished this sentence? Happy wife, happy.
Happy wife, happy life.
Exactly. Well, where is the man in that conversation? It's supposed to be happy spouse, happy house. Mm. Two-thirds, this is the only statistical anomaly that I have discovered. Two-thirds of divorces are filed by women. Exactly.
Like, that is interesting. Like, is there any, like, has there been any sort of common denominator why it's two-thirds women what put that forward? Has there been one common theme?
Well, I have to be careful in the way I present this, but one of the things, if you know what a Wall Street analyst does, a Wall Street analyst studies industries. I was considered an expert on Wall Street on both the semiconductor industry and the communications industry. In fact, I could spend the next 2 hours telling you how your phone works. And so when I decided to take on this role about fixing the marriage problem, I studied the psychology industry. Because it turns out if you study the psychology industry with the objective of figuring it out, you realize the impact of love on our psyche. Mm. But not by studying Freud. In fact, do you know who Carl Jung is?
I have heard of him. He's one of the most like famous known psychologists or something like that, but
he's the most famous unknown psychologist. Mm. He was 19 years younger than Freud. Freud looked up to Jung so much that he considered him not only his heir apparent, but his son. Uh-huh. And we know that Freud's theory is that sex is what motivates us. It's still the basis for the biology theory today. Jung disagreed with that, and they had their famous split in 1912. And Jung went much further than Freud did in figuring out how the mind works. But the industry today still follows Freud. And what that means is the industry today is not at all logical. In fact, one of the things that I realize is that therapists are trained, traditionally speaking, to be emotional, not logical. So let me give you an example. This, to me, blows the entire psychology industry out of the water. Conventional science has long held the belief that the mind is nothing more than the reaction of the chemicals in the brain. That's why you'll hear the concept of being chemically imbalanced. That is the most ridiculous concept that supposedly is science that I've ever heard of in my entire life. They still believe in the biology theory, which basically states that we're not capable of thinking, that we're only capable of feeling. So when you go in therapy, for example, the most common approach to therapy is the how does it make you feel question. Mm-hmm. So you go into therapy and you sit around and talk about the feelings of the argument that you and your spouse had yesterday, without an ounce of curiosity on why that happens. There's no logic in therapy. So if you've ever gone to a traditional therapist, men have a very difficult time in therapy because there's no goal, there's no outcome, there's no objective, there's no logic to therapy whatsoever. And so you sit around and talk about your feelings all day long without any questioning why or trying to find the root causes of the problem or any cognitive discussion whatsoever, any logical discussion whatsoever. There's no logic in traditional therapy. And so I would point the finger to that. Not only that, if you study the relationship books, you'll know that they're all behavioral advice, like the five love languages. When people work with me, when couples work with me, one of the most interesting responses that I get from them is they realize I'm not giving any behavioral advice. I'm discussing things mentally and psychologically, and that is new. There's not a relationship book, at least that I've discovered, that addresses marriages mentally or psychologically, which blows your mind when you realize it. But when you realize that it's very logical, let me give you an example. You've heard of Dr. Phil, right?
Yes, I have.
Yeah. Okay. Here's a quote from Dr. Phil's book on relationships called Relationship Rescue. In the 25 years that I have been doing work in the field of human behavior, I have seen few, if any, genuine relationship conflicts ever get resolved. Tell me how that is helpful. It's not. So when a man reads that, he's like, what does that mean? How is that helpful? How is that helping us solve our marriage problems when this guy is basically saying you can't? It's emotionally based. It's not logically based. And so that's a big reason why guys don't have a lot of interest in getting traditional help. One of the things that happens when I work with people, because my approach is completely logical, it's the most hilarious thing anyway when you see this. I'll do a Zoom call and I'll have a couple. In fact, my favorite story is I have a couple on my Zoom call. I do a free 2-hour seminar. The wife is doing this. The husband, on the other hand, is literally watching television. He's literally looking in another direction. And every once in a while, he'll look at me. He'll look at this. By the end of the conversation, this guy is doing this. He is, because it's so logical. And I explain the logic, just like I just went into. It's equality. Women are no longer subordinate. It's all, everything I do is logical on how I put this mosaic together on how couples can learn to stay together. So when guys realize what I'm saying makes sense, they completely get attentive to what I'm saying, and it gets them engaged as well. So that's basically the way I look at it. There's no solution yet, logical solution to the marriage problem. That is what I'm doing to change that.
Because this is the thing, I think when it comes to you, focus on logic, and the thing I like, you focus on why. The whole thing is the very word why is one of the most powerful things in this universe. Okay, if you've got a fuzzy why, it will lead you astray. You have to drag it and you have to lift it up, and eventually you will quit on that. You will quit on that why, and you'll just move on. If you've got a strong why, a heavy why, a why what generates its own gravity, so it pulls you along no matter what you're doing. I've woken up at 4 o'clock in the morning. No, it's time to go. Your why is going, time to go, let's go, let's move, and it drags you along. You can't escape it, and it pushes, takes you to new places you never thought you could go. But a why in marriage, discovering why, remembering why you got together, remembering why you've made this commitment to each other.
Well, but here's the point.
Yeah.
The goal is not to find love. That's the easy part.
Mm.
The goal is to find the barriers that you have created to keep you opening up from love. They're called blind spots, or psychologically speaking, they're called shadows. The problem is, when you have a shadow, because we all basically view our own perspective of reality through our own lenses. Mm. In these blind spots, we cannot see them. They're called shadows. This is why the professionals are supposed to exist, to help us become aware and conscious. Because the goal is to make conscious what is unconscious, or else it appears as fake. And so why is a question that I'm basically introducing into the psychology industry, because that question is not part of the industry yet. So I am asking the question of why. In fact, I've asked the question all the way down to understanding why people have mental issues, and they're not biologically based, contrary to what the industry continues to preach to us.
It must be kind of how can I say it? It must be kind of not frustrating, but you must be sometimes standing there going, wait a second, how can you not see this? How can, it's so plain as day. Why are you choose? What's going on? Am I wrong? Are you guys right? Or do you know, and you don't want to tell anyone? What's going on?
Let me, Yeah, let me explain to you what I mean by the only reason why I can confidently and comfortably say that I have solved the marriage problem is because I forgave my parents when I was 25 years old. It turns out the most significant factor in a marriage is the relationship with the parents, because that's where you first learn about love. Before I forgave my parents, they destroyed my childhood. They ruined me. They were unbelievably oppressive. I could literally talk for a long time on all of the things that my parents did that ruined my childhood and destroyed me, right? But once I forgave them, which means to cancel, by the way, when you truly forgive somebody, you literally cancel all of the anxieties that you have towards them. Only then was I able to open my eyes to the reality that my parents did a good job. And I was able to see the value of what my parents did. I'm not in prison. I was never molested as a child. I mean, to be honest with you, you've got two responsibilities as a parent. Make sure nobody touches your kids and make sure your kids learn the difference between right and wrong. Those are the two biggest responsibilities as a parent. And my parents, loving parents, in fact, before they would spank us, they would say, "We're doing this because we love you." My parents did a great job, but I was blind to that before I forgave them. It took me forgiving them before I was able to look at my parents objectively.
But wouldn't you say that just simply comes from the realm of perspective, getting that little bit wiser as time goes by, and basically not being afraid to sort of actually look into those sort of shadows, take a good look at yourself in that mirror? Because, and yeah, move into those places which might be uncomfortable to actually sort of learn and grow, wouldn't you say?
You just hit the nail on the head. You just concluded my conversation, so we can finish now. I'm joking. I'm joking. The Chinese have a saying, and that saying is that history is a mirror. If people were to learn one simple thing, and that's instead of getting angry at your partner, you realize that your partner is triggering a nerve inside of you to help you see yourself. Because if you want to get to know yourself, you look in the mirror. And what that means, the point of the saying is, if you understand your history. And so what I do is I get into conflicts. And just to summarize quickly, it turns out that when somebody's angry, there's a fear underneath the anger. And if people would look at the fear instead of the anger, we're focused on the anger right now. You know, you come home late from work and your partner gets mad at you. Okay, if you're not doing the wrong thing, you realize that they're not mad at you because you came home late from work. They're mad at you because they have low self-esteem. They have abandonment issues. Mom and dad got divorced. They have some fear that you triggered within them. And if couples could only learn to turn the conversation towards the person who is angry, to realize and understand what their fear is that's motivating them to be angry, now you're going to the root causes of the problem. And now you can get to what needs to happen in order to solve the problem, which is, again, you've made a couple comments about growing up. This is a maturing process. And this first step, by the way, is forgiving your childhood. But once you get through that process, then the next steps are getting to know who you are, patience, forgiveness, all of these things that we are supposed to be doing as adults, which makes us better partners for our spouse. But we have to go through this maturing process in order to be able to open up our eyes to the objectivity of who our partner is, not looking through the lens of our history and our background based on what we've learned about love that our partner had nothing to do with. Because again, your partner's not mad at you because you came home late from work. They're mad at you because they're afraid of some low self-esteem, some issue of their background that they have yet to understand how to explore. And what you basically do is you learn as a couple to be sort of mini therapists with each other. So if your wife were to walk in here, or your girlfriend were to walk in here now, and she started yelling at you, and you could turn around and say, "What are you afraid of, honey? I love you. I want to spend the rest of my life with you," whatever. Then you turn the count. "What do you mean? What am I afraid of?" "Well, you're mad at me because of some fear, because I love you. I'm not trying to upset you." That's the most interesting thing about conflicts, is no moral person, at least at the beginning of the relationship, is trying to upset their partner. You know, you didn't, if you're, you know, if your girlfriend's ever got mad, you're not trying to upset her. You know, it's only when the relationship is at the end that you don't care any longer. But your partner still can get mad at you, even though you're doing what you think is supposed to be the right thing because of the lens that they're seeing through you through.
So with this, like, what would you say, okay, people, again, trying to get people to look through those lenses, trying to get them to sort of, like, get past, like, whatever sort of distraction what might be there to the, like, being able to see the truth or and the react, like, the truth of the situation of that person. What would, like, what would you say, apart from, like, yes, dealing with the childhood first of all, how can you sort of convey that to each other, this is what's going on, and, like, well, you need to have a better look at each other rather than look at the BS issue which might be there.
When I work with couples and they grasp this one concept, it's almost as if I can hear an audible click that it finally clicked. And this concept is when couples learn to take on the world instead of taking on each other. Okay, when you get there, in order to do that, you have to create a judgment-free zone in your marriage so that both can bring up things that they may not be so proud of about their past, knowing that their partner won't judge them. When they do that and they learn the concept of growing together, which is what we're supposed to be figuring out what to do, when you grow together as a partnership, you learn to take on the world instead of each other. But it's important to understand what a partnership is. Okay, when you understand that, let's say midway that you and I are going to start a business together. Mm-hmm. Okay, would we be successful if both of us were salespeople?
Well, it depends what type of business it is.
No, that's not the point of a partnership. If we are both salespeople, we are redundant. Successful businesses occur because the two people that found the company are skilled in different things. You have your skill set, I have my skill set. Okay? Partnership is not about being the same person, is the point I'm making. Because when people think that their partner's not like them, their partner's not supposed to be exactly like them. You have your skill sets, your girlfriend has her skill sets. And when you realize that, in fact, if you get into the biblical world, you know, one of the problems with the Bible is it's patriarchy written. So the wife is subordinate to the man. But the reality is that then they get into the concept of submission. But what submission really means in a true partnership is you submit to your girlfriend's skills and your girlfriend submits to your skills. Mm. Just like if I was an accountant and you were a sales guy, you would submit to my accounting skills and I would submit to your sales skills. That's what a true partnership is.
Yeah, I often, like, I hear that and, like, you know what, the way you're saying it, it sounds solid, it sounds logical, it makes all the sense to me in the world. But, like, this is the thing, like, I have seen, and I've been in sort of relationships where it's just be like, okay, yeah, got to be the same, got to think the same, like, yeah. And I've got to say those relationships for myself haven't worked out, but I've seen people which, like, yeah, doggedly drag that relationship all the way up to, like, up to the order of marriage when you kind of look at it and go, are you sure you guys should get married? Because it's like, yeah, how, like, if two people are pretty much a mirror image of themselves, is that something you can work with? Or is it a case of you got to be like, wow, it's like your dark, both of your darkness is exactly the same, both of your lights exactly the same. How on earth are you going to make this house stand?
Well, what I do when I work with people is I'm the objective outside observer. I'm the one that's able to look at objectively what's going on between two people. But what I teach people in order to get this done, so what I do is I break an argument down into its component parts. It turns out there's a process that leads to an argument. It begins with an insecurity, which is a fear and anxiety. And the example I like to use, because most of us can relate to this Say your parents got divorced. So now your parents got divorced. That is what you view love as. And you bring that fear of divorce into your marriage. And that insecurity then becomes a prejudice. This is one of the things that I've discovered that's new in the psychology world. And that's that our mental problems are nothing more than prejudices. I call them relationship prejudice. You may have a prejudice about marriage because your parents got divorced. That prejudice then leads to judgment or being judgmental, which then leads to anger. So what I'm doing, again, I'm connecting the dots between fear and anger. Mm. And so what you're doing is you're learning that when somebody is triggered and they're getting angry at you, again, instead of focusing on the anger and the behavior, you're focusing on the fear and the character traits. One of the things that I realized, another discovery of mine that is new, is what causes behavior? This is a question that the industry has asked for 100 years, but because of the biology theory, they are still studying animals to answer that question. Psychologically speaking, though, the simple answer to what causes behavior are your character traits or your belief system. So, for example, okay, and I am a nice guy, okay, but I don't think that about myself. I don't walk around saying, Tim's a nice guy, Tim's a nice guy. That is my belief system. That is my character trait. But my behavior motivated on that belief system is I wave and I'm nice and I open doors and I do things. When you realize it's your character traits, it's your belief system, which is motivating you in your marriage, then you get to the cause of the problem. Because here's the most important point about this. When you first met your girlfriend, and it's all the same, so you did the same things everybody else did, you did what I call character research. You talked about where you came from, your siblings, your parents, you grew up, you did this, and your girlfriend talked about this, about her, your upbringing. In the psychology world, it's called a false facade. You're putting your best foot forward, as you should, because you're trying to impress each other. But people fall in love with their spouse's character. They fall out of love because they're focused on their spouse's behavior. And they lose sight of their spouse's character. So let me give you an example. Okay. So I'm working with this couple.
Okay.
We get done working. About 4 or 5 months later, the wife texts me, and this is literally what she said in her text, because she knows that my big message is forgiving your parents. So she goes, I forgave my dad. My dad was controlling. My husband is just like my dad, and he's not controlling me too. The first thing she said was she hasn't forgiven her dad. She doesn't realize that, because if she forgave her dad, she would be able to look at the good in her dad, and she would not project her dad's controlling nature onto her husband. But listen to what her husband did. So her husband works nights and he sleeps when he gets home. One morning he decided to wake up early and to help his wife get the kids ready for school. And because of that, she wanted to divorce him. Because it wasn't about her, him getting the kids ready for school, his character as a good father, it was because she viewed his behavior as controlling, because that was her domain. She was the one that got the kids ready for school. She could not objectively look at her husband's character because she was focused on behavior. She lost sight of the fact that her husband's a loving father and a helpful parent. She did not see that in her husband. All she saw in her husband was his behaviors. And again, I do point to the psychology industry focus on behavior, but we focus on people's behavior now instead of who they are as their character.
Mm. I think that's one of the things, how can I put it? I think that's one of the traits which is a bigger thing now in the whole of society, rather than just like marriage itself, because I like much of the things you're saying, much of the things you're talking about, how can I put it? The sort of relationships between communities really need that a type of medicine, that type of talking. But unfortunately, we live in a time where that those conversations, depending what sort of topic you're going into, I dare not mention any of them right now, but it can, like, rather than sort of a conversation or like going, hey, let me look at the character of the person who might be there or the character of a community, they go into red alert mode and, like, yeah, pretty much explode straight.
Well, let me further my point. And I hope that, and I'm being funny here, so don't take what I'm about to say serious, but I hope I don't upset you because you're in London. What are you about to say, Tim? You'll get my point here in a second. So my son, who is 16 years old, his middle name is Hamilton. Okay? Because I was reading Alexander Hamilton's biography when he was in the womb. And this was before the play came out. And so if you know the story of Alexander Hamilton, he was killed in a duel with Aaron Burr in 1804 over Carrick. And the funny point I'm making with you being in London is our founding fathers, just like yours, our founding fathers were men of character. When they communicated with each other, they communicated about their characters, which is their belief system. And they were men of differing belief systems, but they focused on the belief system. They focused on the character of the individual back in the days of our founding fathers, where today we lost sight of character and now we're focused on behavior.
I would say behavior and just emotion. It's like, it doesn't feel right. Even though it might, the factual information might not actually support the argument there, like people feel about that particular situation at that time. It's like, yeah, like.
Well, but see, here's the point about this. Okay, we have accepted divorce as a product of our society today. We've accepted divorce as something that's going to happen in 50% of our marriages. That is just, there's no objective out there. Our marriages today exist in a state of chaos. Legislation without law, wisdom without a plan. The mind of the multitude is left at random, and seeing no fixed object before them, they pursue such as fancy or opinion states. There is no such thing as treason, wherefore everyone thinks himself at liberty to act as he pleases. This is the state of our culture of marriage today. There is no structure in our state of marriages today. They are in a state of chaos because of our culture of divorce. So what I'm doing is I'm introducing structure in a marriage. And let me explain to you what that structure is.
Oh, I'm all ears. Yes. Like, look, you throw down the eloquent word or two when you need to. Yes, going from Alexander Hamilton to here. Yeah.
Well, here's another Revolutionary War idea. Okay, this comes from a guy who immigrated from London to Boston at the request of Benjamin Franklin by the name of Thomas Paine. Oh. And Thomas Paine wrote the publication which was the biggest influence on the Revolutionary War, and it was entitled Common Sense. Common sense is the foundation of a successful marriage. In fact, one of the things I realized is if I could take the subjectivity of the individual out of the conversation, I can not only solve literally all of the marriage problems, but you'll discover that the solution is quite simple, because common sense is something that we have been discussing for 200 years now. Common sense is called the news. You either have somebody who abided by common sense, they contributed to a charity, or somebody who broke common sense, they robbed a bank. We see common sense every day when we watch the news. In fact, one of the most humorous comments that I get when I mention the concept of common sense is I'll get somebody blindly through their own prison respond, well, common sense isn't common. And my response to them is, well, actually it is. It's in the title of the label. What they're saying is they've experienced things that are not common sense. Thinking it's common sense. And what they have to understand is this notion. And common sense, quite simply, is nothing more than what most people would agree to. That's all common sense is. Because what the democracy in America did for the first time in human civilization was it gave the voice to the masses. That's what democracy is by definition, is now the masses have a voice. So here's one of my favorite examples. I know I'm kind of being hard on the psychology industry, but that is the foundation of what we turn to. Well, if you've heard of the concept of insecurity, right? Mm-hmm. Insecurity does not exist in the psychology textbooks. It is referred to as a neurosis, a disorder, a psychosis, all of these biological descriptions of our mental problems. Well, they're not true. And so since the professionals did not actually solve the problem, it took the overall community to come up with the concept of common sense, I mean, of insecurity as our the source of our mental problems. And so now insecurity has permeated the culture, but it doesn't come to us in any professional world. It comes to us from the common person who has been asking these questions. All I am, my dad was a cab driver. I don't come from anything. And all I'm doing is I'm lending voice to the people who are trying to figure out how to solve their marriage problems and can't figure it out. And they don't have a route yet or a path yet to be able to figure that out. In fact, I have formed a group on Facebook.
Yes, it's okay. Quite a sizable group.
You're okay. I was wondering if you and I connected on that group. Yes. In fact, we're just going over 19,000 members in my group. It's called the Marriage Support Group. If anybody who was watching this wants to join, it's called the Marriage Support Group. Just went over 19,000 members, and I get about 100 posts a day in this group, and about half of them are my husband does this, my wife does this. And so the collective community, this is one of the reasons why I built this group, is the collective community is coming to give help. Now, granted, there's a portion of the help that's divorce them, judgmental, get out of it. But there's also, and I'm trying to motivate more and more people to actually give productive advice. Have you thought about this? So you do this, and you'll get better guidance in my group than you will with the five love languages or other behavioral advice. Because the community is built, is looking at this from a mental perspective. And again, that's new in the marriage business.
So how long did it take you to build your community up to 19,000 people? Because that is a sizable feat.
Well, so let me tell you my group story. So, and I'll be short on this, but I belong to about 40 marriage groups. I have been kicked out of about 12 marriage groups. In fact, one of them is called Fireproof Your Marriage. It's a really good Christian-based reconciliation movie called Fireproof.
Yeah.
A guy formed a group called Fireproof Your Marriage, a Catholic priest, and he and I went about 6 months back and forth on what I could and could not post in this group. He was trying to control what I could not post, which there was validity to it. He wouldn't let me post any links to my event, for example. I couldn't reach out to women. They had to reach out to me. It all made sense. But 6 months into this process, I found out that I was blocked. I begged this Catholic priest literally every 2 weeks for the next 6 months to let me back in. And he not only did not, but he never responded to a single text that I sent him, a single DM I sent him. So one of the things that I've done in my group, which is new and unique, is I allow other marriage experts to contribute.
Yeah.
In fact, I promote other marriage. I want them. Whenever they reach out to me personally, I say, please give help. You have events. You have free access to my group. Because there's 19,000 members. It's not, I mean, you know, obviously they're doing financially and there's greed and ego and all the reasons why they build these groups. I have no ego and I have no greed. It's not about me. My mission is to lower the divorce rate. Mm. And one of the things that I realize is I can't do it alone. J- just so you know, Mingwei, where I'm at now, I belong to an organization called the Mentor Studio. The Mentor Studio was founded by a guy by the name of Michael Silvers, who created the Peak Performance Coaching Program for T. Harv Eckert and his business partners, Mary Glorfield. Mary Glorfield was Tony Robbins' VP for 18 years. And one of the biggest things I've learned with the Mentor Studio is don't do this by yourself. And so I belong with a community of other people who have a message to share with the world, and we're all helping each other. I'm about to get on big stages where I'm going to take my message to these big stages.
Yeah, like this is the thing. When I speak to people, one of the things I commonly come across when I know someone's making a mistake, they don't actually look to sort of build a team, build a community around them to help them like push forward. Because if you want to do something big, grand, or like quite momentous, you need those people around you. If you don't have those people around you, it will never work. And this is the reason why you need these people. Because like, yes, as you say, with regards to if you're starting a business, you can't have like, and there's only two of you, both of you can't be doing sales. It's a case of if you want to like talk to a large group of people, where it might be it could be different couples, like, from different parts of the world where you might not be able to connect with them, but someone else would be able to connect with them, that works out great. If it's a case of it's the same sex couple and like you're like, I have no idea about same sex relationships, but you got the next person coming in to support you on that, great. It just means you with your organization can just do so much more, be so much more, and be that servant to help reduce that divorce rate on that greater level.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's a community. I used to be really involved with Clubhouse. I've met dozens of other marriage experts. Mm. Most of them, or literally virtually all of them, have a biblical approach to marriage. You get better guidance from people with a biblical background, because I read 24 relationship books as part of my research, and forgiveness is not mentioned in a single relationship book. For forgiveness is part of the religious teachings. It's not part of the psychology teaching. So you get better guidance from a biblical perspective. So I've been able to build relationships with a bunch of other people in the marriage business who approach it from a biblical perspective.
Mm. Why is like forgiveness not a more of a common theme? In any of these relationship books?
So let me give you the final straw in the relationship between Freud and Jung. Okay. This was a conversation between Freud and Jung. Freud looked at Jung one day and said, "Whatever you do, my dear son, please promise me this one thing." And Jung describes it like a father telling his son, "Promise me never to miss church on Sunday." He looked at Jung, he said, "Please promise me this one thing. Promise me that you will never abandon the sexuality theory, a dogma of it. We must make an unshakable bulwark." And Jung, surprised, looks back at Freud and said, "A bulwark against what?" In which Freud responded, "Against occultism." And so that got Jung thinking. Imagine if you and I were business partners and I were to tell you, "Whatever you do, Mingwei, promise me you'll never disagree with me."
Yeah. No worries. It's Miwa. Miwa.
Miwa. Miwa. Okay. I'm
just, yes. Miwa. It's like people that go, "Who is this Miwa guy?"
No, but Miwa. Yeah. Miwa. Yeah. So again, that's not the way professionals dialogue with each other. And so what Jung discovered, Freud grew up in Vienna. Mm. Jewish. Who else grew up in Vienna at the same time? Hitler. Do you think that Freud experienced any anti-Semitism? Of course he did. Hitler burned his books in Berlin in 1939. And so he was not religious. But what Jung is doing in this dialogue, after Freud telling him, "No, don't abandon the sexuality theory," is Jung is saying, "Well, what difference does it make if you call it by one name versus another?" And his big conclusion is that Freud was replacing a God from above with a God from below is what Jung literally said, but what he means is that Freud was replacing religion with sex. And so there's no, Freud did not create a science. Freud created a religion, which is not religious. So he created a religion of, but think about this. If you go to that group, Miwa.
Yes.
I pronounce it right, Miwa? Yes. If you go to that group, Miwa, you will see that about half of the conversations focus on sex.
And basically, with these conversations, I have to ask, is it a case of not getting enough sex? Sex is not being done in the way they like get pleasure from? Or is it a case of too demanding for sex? What, or is it all of the above when these conversations kick off?
So one of the, Freud and Jung were psychoanalyzing artists. Okay. For example, Leonardo da Vinci painted the Mona Lisa.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And they were trying to figure out the motivation of the artist. Why did Leonardo da Vinci paint the Mona Lisa? And I'm just using that example. I don't know if they were actually talking about that. But to Freud, the motivation was either sexual or psychosexual. Jung referred to it as the monotony of interpretation. First of all, the problem with that concept is that more than likely Leonardo da Vinci was gay. Leonardo da Vinci had no sexual motivation for painting the Mona Lisa. There was no sexual drive. This whole sex theory is false. But Freud said it, and Jung looked at Freud and said, Freud, your hypothesis carried to its conclusion damns our culture, destroys our culture. Freud looked back at Jung and said, so be it, thus is the curse that we are faced with. So what Freud basically discovered was that sex sells, and because of Freud's influence in the psychology industry, we are promoting a regressive, biological, animalistic message of marriage. It's not sex, by the way, Miwa. It's lovemaking. Lovemaking is a mental experience. Sex is a biological, bestial experience. But you won't have a conversation on lovemaking in my group. You have a conversation on sex. This is what the influence of the psychology industry has done to our culture today. I think about this whenever I'm driving around outside. I'm driving going, I know that the whole society is all in this degraded state because of what Freud started with his beliefs and the permeation of those beliefs now 100 years later.
So like, this is the thing. Okay, people talk about sex a lot, but like, yeah, when it comes down to like the relationship side, the whole sort of the many sort of building blocks what lead to something long, more sustainable, rather than say like spilling out of a bar slightly like inebriated at some time in the morning. You're the best, you're the love of my life. Yes, you too, in the morning, like going, what was I thinking? What was I drinking? But like, that's another story. But like, yeah, what, like, would you say we need to just encourage more conversations about relationships, encourage more conversations where, yeah, not like, not to like put sex away in some dark corner, like some taboo, but it's there, but how like sex can add to relationship, what, like what it means to a relationship, all that in like encompassed into what a like everything a relationship can give, enhance, and in some respects take away. It's not always positive upside, but you know, there is like, but be able to talk the truth about relationships on all levels.
Here's the way I answer that question. Infidelity is not the cause of problems in your marriage. Infidelity is the result of problems in your marriage. I can't tell you how many of those comments on my group where somebody said my spouse is cheating on me. And I'll respond. I post that frequently. Well, it's not the cause of the problems in your marriage. It's the result of the problems. If you want to solve the sex problem, get the rest of your crap figured out. Figure out how the two of you can come together and become friends. Ultimately, what I do is I teach couples to become friends with each other, like each other. You love each other. You've got the physical part. You love each other, but learn to be friends with each other. Learn to get along with each other. Learn to like each other.
Yeah. Learn to like each other. Like each other in a relationship. Like each other in a marriage. Are you crazy, sir?
Exactly.
Have you lost your mind?
What? Exactly.
The audacity of it all. Like,
well, but it's important to understand me. Well, this it's important to understand in 1900, 5% of the population in America graduated from high school. 5% got high school diplomas in 1900. That means 95% of the people did not graduate from high school in 1900. I have a graduate degree. Not only do I have an engineering degree, and not only that, with the internet, which is the information age, we are so much more aware today than we have ever been. A balanced ego is not when you're better than anybody else. It's when you're better than you used to be. That is the billion-dollar objective for each of us to be able to stand on our own two feet and have an objective combination of dependence and independence within a marriage so that we can grow into who we're supposed to be and our partner grows into who they're supposed to be. Let me make a profound point here with you, Miwa.
Okay.
Give me one word that you would use to describe the concept of equality in just one word.
Balance.
Okay. Let me ask the question this way now. Say you were a slave. Say you were in bondage. You were owned as a piece of property. What do you think equality would mean to you then?
Well, freedom for one.
Bing, 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 bing. There's a reason why Martin Luther King mentions the word freedom 11 times in his I Have a Dream speech. When you understand that equality means freedom, and when you have equality in your marriage, you have the freedom to grow into who you can grow into or who you're supposed to be. And your partner has the freedom to grow into who he or she is supposed to be. But here is the caveat. Enlightenment comes at a price. You have to give up your limitations. When I work with people, what I'm doing when I work with people is I'm getting them to get through and get over their limiting beliefs. Nobody will ever win a debate with me claiming that they are not good enough. They will never win that debate with me. God does not make mistakes. So when people think less of themselves, they think little of themselves. There's a reason why people have low self-esteem. Quite honestly, and I'm saying this more anecdotally than statistically, I think the biggest problem in a marriage is low self-esteem, quite honestly. Where one or both in a marriage thinks lowly of themselves. But that is not what God wants them to think about themselves. God will never agree with them saying they're not good enough. Yet many people say that about themselves.
Yeah, no, I agree. Many people do say them about themselves. And when you mentioned like, yeah, only 5% of like people like in the 1900s, graduated from high school into the world. And now we live in an age where more people are being highly educated, more like who knows what the percentage come out of the high school, but a larger and larger percentage of the population are going on to doing degrees and getting more information than ever before to be enlightened with regards to knowledge about the world, about them. It's very much, how can I say, focusing on the outer rather than dealing with anything to do with the inner, I find. And when it comes to sort of like realms of insecurity and like self-belief and confidence. I would say when you've got someone who really has that self-belief, confidence, and like, yeah, they have done a lot of work looking at themselves rather than doing the external, which is great.
But your fault. Yeah. Your fault. Instead of doing this. Exactly. Yeah.
They need to do like take a look at the internal and work on that. And once they sort of build a solid foundation within themselves, going out into the world is so much easier. Going out and facing new things becomes not, it's not that it's easy. It's a case of you have more confidence about taking on this big task rather than sort of shying away from it. You step to it, you know?
Well, but you also have to keep in mind the point that I'm making. So let me use you example. You are obviously very aware. You're intelligent and knowledgeable. You're a conscious person. I would venture to guess that your girlfriend is the same way, that she's intelligent, she's aware, and it's so more important, so much more important, because you just said what I think is the most important word in the English language, and that word is balance. Mm. That is what is key. In order for you both to be balanced, you guys got to be aware of each other. I mean, it's so much easier for one of you to be able to start trying to trigger the control mechanism. Because ultimately what I'm doing is I'm neutralizing the power drive. I'm eliminating control in a marriage. But it would be real easy for one of you to say, I'm the boss. Mm. Okay, remember, 2/3 of divorces are filed by women, but men and women are both now very aware of who they are. They're very conscious. I've said this literally my whole adult life, and that's that I live my life in my mind. That's a phrase that I've been saying to myself forever. I know that my whole world exists up here. Watching you is an experience that I'm bringing through mentally, and I'm experiencing myself in my mind. What's going on? We are all this way. We all live our lives in our minds. But what happens is now you realize that I have the choice on whether I let something upset me or not. Mm. And so here, let me go through one of the other big things that I teach. Okay. Again, getting back, I love democracy. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. When most people see that phrase, they look at the pursuit of happiness part. What I do is I break down life and liberty. Life is morality. All life is precious, taught to us by the church. In relationships, morality manifests itself as empathy or understanding your partner's feelings. Mm-hmm. Liberty is a political concept, equality. In relationships, equality manifests itself as respect or understanding your partner's thoughts. In fact, it comes to us from To Kill a Mockingbird. If you want to understand a man, you have to walk in his shoes. The biggest thing that I teach couples that when I work with them is to learn the ability to see things from their partner's perspective. So let me give you the example that I use to demonstrate this point.
Okay.
Do you get mad at slow drivers?
Not so much me. My lady definitely does. It's like, yeah.
I used to all the time. In fact, when I was working on Wall Street, I had a sports car. So I used to, you know, drive very fast, and I would get so upset at slow drivers. I have solved that problem for myself. And how I solved that problem was when I realized that the other driver is driving someplace too. When I was able to look at the slow driver from their perspective, all of the anxieties behind slow drivers has been eliminated. But think about that concept as it pertains to your relationship. Think about if you're able to understand things from your girlfriend's perspective and she was able to understand things from your perspective. You realize that conflicts disagreements are going to always exist. Mm. But arguments will either go away or they will be very rare. When there's a pause, so your girlfriend walks in right now, does something, and it irritates you. If you take a moment to pause, to say, why is she doing, what is her perspective? Not what is my perspective, but what is her perspective? It completely neutralizes the anxieties that exist in relationships. That is the most important thing that I teach people when I work with them.
Mm. Perspective. Yeah, once again, like I'm going to say it again, like, yes, if we could, like, this is much needed, I would say, definitely in society as a whole, and not just for marriage, because, like, yes, like, the sort of ability to see things from other people's perspective to sort of, like, be able to go, right, I get
let
it.
Can I tell you a joke?
Okay, go for it.
Can I tell you a joke? Okay, so... This will in a humorous way kind of highlight my point. So I have a friend of mine. Mm. This guy has sex 2 to 3 times a day. This guy works out 2x a day. This guy reads 2 books a week. And all I ever hear from this guy are the constant complaints about how much he hates prison life.
That's a dark joke.
Got you thinking, though. Think about how your vision of sex changed. First, you think it 2 to 3 times a day. Your eyes got twice the size.
That doesn't sound too bad. But I was like, ooh.
And then you realize it's prison sex. That's not fun anymore.
I think that comes down to if you're giving or receiving. That's another story. That's what I'm going to say.
Boy, we're going in the rabbit hole now. See, this is where sex conversations go.
You should have said rabbit hole.
Talk about sex.
I just said you should have said rabbit hole. That's what's wrong.
It's all wrong.
Burrows deep, say no more.
But the point is that one of the things I've discovered is I have discovered that there are at least 2 different perspectives in a marriage.
At least
2 different.
Well, they can be 3. That's whoever's having the affair at the time. That's another. Yeah, yeah.
Well, no, you get the kids, you get the parents, you get the friends, you get work, you get school, you get all of these other perspectives. But so there are at least 2.
Like, this is the thing. Everyone puts their 2 cents into giving their opinion, but they don't actually stick around and honestly help with the work, what needs to be done for a marriage. It's like, yes, you should do this, you should do that. Oh, can you help us with the process?
One of the big sayings that I teach, and this is ultimately what I am attempting to get people to understand in their marriage. This is going to be funny at first, then a little caustic, but then you'll get my point. The difference between somebody who is intelligent and somebody who is ignorant is one of them knows they're ignorant. Think about that. I am the most ignorant person that you'll ever meet, and I don't mean that in any degrading point whatsoever, because I know I don't know a lot. Once people realize they don't know everything, well, you know how a conflict goes. You're 100% right, she's 100% wrong. Her response is she's 100% right and you're 100% wrong. I hate to tell you this, but I don't think I will ever, ever, ever find a problem in a marriage that is 100% one person's fault. I don't think it exists.
Well, like, this is the whole thing. Like, you're always going to get, like, yes, the sword. Their side, your side, and in the middle, the truth. Getting that sort of, like, anyone who is truly aware of themselves knows there is more to it. But in that heat of the moment, when you've got that sort of ape brain going, logic and reason quickly go out of the window. And it's just about
being out. But to argue with a person who has abandoned the use of reason is like administering medicine to the dead. Once you get to that state of an argument, you are at a point of no return. You've got to pull yourself out of that emotional state because it's important to understand me why. So you're a jerk. So that I just yelled at you. I just said it. I'm joking. No, but the point I'm making is, so when somebody is at that state of mind, I'm just making a point. But when I call you a jerk, I'm doing that unconsciously. I am in an elevated emotional state. Mm. So when you get to that, you're not aware. I'm not really saying that, but if I were to really say that, when people get into this, they are unconscious. I'm not saying logically you're a jerk. That's not a logical, that is an angry, argumentative, emotional, unconscious concept. So when I teach people the what are you afraid of question, so if you learn what I teach and I call you a jerk, you look back at me and go, well, Tim, what are you afraid of? What that does, it pulls me out of the emotional state back down into the logical state. Now I have to get back into logical. Well, because of this or that or whatever. But so what I'm doing is I'm pulling people out of that unconscious emotional state. Unfortunately, that most relationships exist in, most relationships are unconscious in that most relationships are reactionary. Have you and your girlfriend ever sat down and said, well, when we have conflicts, this is how we're going to handle it. We're going to do it this way, this way, this way, and this way. That is when you become aware of how you deal with conflicts. Or do you just wait for something to come up and you start responding in a reactionary mode, which is an unconscious response when you don't understand what's going on?
Honestly, I can't actually say it's one way or the other. Like, to say it's like, yes, to like logically work things through one stage to the other, right, there might be some of that sometimes. But like, yeah, to say it's just purely a reactionary thing, maybe sometimes, but most times, no. It's just one of those things. I haven't really ever sort of sat down and gone, I must analyze what goes on with my relationship. And
yeah, like, but also bear in mind that you are more than likely a pretty good guy, pretty conscious, pretty aware, pretty healed, pretty mature. You probably got a good sense about you. And again, since like meets like, I would think that your girlfriend's the same way. But we're talking about people who have very unhealthy state of mind.
Then, like, you know, like going through, like when your first example of like going, yes, let me work my way through it, is never going to be an option to a couple like that. Yeah, it's going to be much more of a reactionary state where like things like whatever is the flare up or like that incident, which may be as small as, oh yeah, you left your socks out. Yeah. Rage. Or like, yeah, you don't, like, you never seem to get ready in time. Rage. Wherever that lies, it's just
the husband wakes up early to help the kids get ready for school. Rage. Yeah. Control. Anger. I mean, this is how we are not aware. And so this wife just jumped to these conclusions emotionally without even being aware of what she was doing. And when I got the two together, I was able to pull her out of that emotional state and get her back into that logical state and get them back on track.
But I would say for some couples, just to say do it by themselves, it is almost a nigh on impossible task, which is good news for your business. But it's a case of, it seems like there are those sort of support mechanisms of like either family or friends, which would be there maybe in the past to like pull someone out of that sort of mindset into more of a logical and reasonable state, are not kind of there anymore. Or if they are, they're like quite distant. As I said earlier, no one's prepared to like they're prepared to give their two cents, but not to actually do like go on along with the process, you know?
You have to be careful with that thought process as well. So, and I'm going to make a joke. So my wife is such an idiot. What do you think I'm going to continue to say after that comment? I'm going to bring out things to prove my point that is subjective from my perspective. You could probably convince your circle of friends anything you wanted to about your girlfriend. You could go to your friends and go, listen to what she's done. And you can skew the way that you present to your friends and family in your favor. That's why you got to be really careful when you go and seek advice from family and friends, because it's going to be a one-sided conversation. Now, if you're sitting next to your girlfriend and the two of you together are having a conversation, that way both of you can state your perspective and somebody could objectively look at what both of you are saying and weigh what's being said against common sense and reality. Again, that's what the professionals are supposed to be doing. They're supposed to be the objective outside observer. That's what I am. I am basically just the face of objectivity. That's what I do. That's what I provide.
Because many of these therapists you're like you talk about, and you've have given them a good 1-2 punch, let's just say, with regards to what you've like said, they are pretty much the agents of chaos at this present time, and like slowly leading many a couple to the abyss rather than taking away from
it. I had a therapist give me her business card once, and her business card said that she was a marriage and divorce therapist.
I say that again, because she was a marriage.
You got to understand, divorce is better for business, because divorce means there are more people that are screwed up that they can get access to work with. It's better for a couple to get divorced for the psychology world than it is for a couple to stay together.
You know what? If I ever was in the position where I needed I need a marriage counselor, and on the business card it had marriage and divorce, just be like going, huh? It's like I'm just like going, yeah. You get them coming and you get them going. Take your card back. Stay the hell away from me, because ultimately, you got to think they're not going to be in it for your best interest, your best benefit. It's like, yeah, goes to the rocks. Thank you very much. You still need me.
Exactly. So, but yeah, but this is the point. I realize where I'm at and how much more advanced than my message is. In fact, I actually advance some of Carl Jung's concepts. I've got some original ideas that advance some of the things that Carl Jung has discovered, which is really cool when you get to that level of depth. Mm-hmm. But there are things that we need to learn. But this is the point. We have a 50% failure rate. Imagine if 50% of our cars failed, or 50% of the Pepsi that you drank failed. We would have an uproar. We would, as a society, would gather. What, you can't have 50% failure rate in soda?
It's sugar-free, don't judge me. But
we have a 50% failure rate in our marriage, and we just take it for granted.
Oh, no, this is a thing. Like, a 50% failure rate in anything is unacceptable. You don't pass the test at 50%. You know what I mean? It's unacceptable. And you're like, oh, there is something severely wrong with what's going on. And trying to rectify that, trying to repair that type of the institution of marriage, it's okay. We must think in a different way. We must go in a slightly different direction. If we don't, what's the percentage rate in 10 years' time?
Think about it this way. In essence, what I am communicating is that children are products of their parents. So if you fix the marriage, what do you think it does to the maturity of the children? What do you think that fixing the family dynamics does to the dynamics of society?
This is the thing. You could, maybe you can correlate the divorce rate to her societal needs. But I can only imagine it would it would be a factor which would lead to more of a plus than a negative in a child's life. Let's just say I can't go, yes, it'll be the be all and end all and fix everything. But yeah, but it'll definitely.
No, that's not true, of course. But it's our society starts, the kernel, the seed of our society starts with the family, and the seed of the family starts with the parents. So if we fix the relationship with the parents, what that basically manifests itself throughout the food chain, so to speak, is, yeah, exactly. It raises the level of our society if we are able to fix the marriage problem.
Indeed, indeed. So you mentioned you are aiming to get on big stages, like moving forward. So what direction do you want to like take this in? Look, you got 19,000 people out there on Facebook, like, and growing each and every day. And like, what is next? Is it a case of a million people? Like, is it a case of like trying to save a million marriages? Is it a case of trying to save a billion marriages? What is next?
That's why I like saying lower the divorce rate. So ultimately, the point is to build this sort of tidal wave. And the result of that is you can see statistically that marriages have changed. My goal is to change the culture of marriage, in essence, to wake up people to the significance. And to be honest with you, the reality is your number one priority in your life is the person you sleep next to every night. Not your job, not your kids are only slightly below that, not your football team. None of this is more important.
I'll disagree with you on that.
Exactly.
My lady knows where she comes into the pecking order.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Hey, we don't need to get, we had our football conversation before you hit record, so we don't need to go back there, but yeah, you and I could talk about football for a while as well.
Brilliant.
But that's what we're doing, is we're raising the level of priority of the person we sleep next to every night to being number one as opposed to the last. Right now, our partner is the last on the priority list. Everything else is more important than if there's time or energy or whatever for our partner, then our partner gets that as the last in line versus you put your partner first. And then everything else falls in place when you do it that way.
Do like that. Now, like at times go away for us. Like, yeah. Now, for the final question, I have to bring it to a close. I'm sorry. Okay. I'm enjoying our conversation, but yeah. But like,
me too.
Yeah. But for the final question, now, I have to reveal to you that I am a being of supreme cosmic power, and I can give you one wish and one wish only. You cannot wish for more wishes. You cannot put down a list of things on a piece of paper like going, I wish everything can come true. No world peace, no COVID being gone. It has to be one wish for yourself or someone you know to change their world. What would you wish for?
My one and only focus right now is to get on big stages. My wish would be, let's say once a month, put me on the stage in front of 10 or 20,000 people. That would be my wish. If I can do that once a month, that's the way I can really start having an impact on our culture of marriage.
Excellent. Oh, Tim, loving you a lot. Hey, can you tell the lovely people how they can find you out on the big wide world web?
Exactly. Well, the easiest way to do this, I offer a free 2-hour seminar. So if anybody wants to get engaged with that conversation, my email address is my name, Tim Kellis, K-E-L-L-I-S as in Sam, at happyrelationships.com. So Tim Kellis at happyrelationships.com. The other way, as we've been talking about, go to Facebook, search on Facebook, The Marriage Support Group. You'll see a picture of a couple kissing. Feel free to join the group and we can stay connected that way. But the easiest way, just reach out to me via email, timkellis@happyrelationships.com, and we can start a dialogue that way. That's the best way to get in contact with me.
Ah, Awesome. I'll also put all of this information in the show notes in the description. So yes, find him, connect with him, and yes, he'll be a great help. Tim, I have to say, thank you very much, sir. You have been a superstar, to say the least. Yeah, there he is.
Meanwhile, listen, I appreciate the time, the opportunity, the platform. You know, your podcast has been doing great, and so I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to share my message along with all your other voices that you've allowed to come on your podcast.
The pleasure is all mine. The pleasure is all mine, sir. Yes, awesome. And let me say this to you, my friends, my life warriors, who are sticking with us up until this point. Let me just say thank you for doing that. Please stay safe, stay well, be awesome, be excellent, be fantastic. Be all the positive bees you can be in this world and then some. Have a great day, guys. See you later. Oh, yeah. Peace. Ah, yeah, waving away. Where are we? And we are.